Well, I have to confess, the first time I saw Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on television, I was not impressed. It was a black and white children's TV show with a simple stage set, cheap puppets, and tuneless songs. It was 1968. I was 17 years old. It was the year of the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, the assassination of Martin Luther King, race riots in major American cities, the assassination of Robert Kennedy, the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia, the beating of peace demonstrators in Chicago, the election of Richard Nixon. It was enough to make a young teenager believe in the doctrine of original sin. The excessively sweet sincerity of Fred Rogers with his Pollyanna smile made me, with my cynical adolescent passion, want to say to the television, "Fred, you are totally irrelevant to what is happening in the world." I must admit I held on to this irreverent opinion for 15 years. Sometimes I can be stupid for a long time. I enjoyed the parodies of Mr. Rogers by Johnny Carson, by Robin Williams, and by Eddie Murphy. Then I became a father. And one day in the early 1980s, I was home with my first child. We turned on the television, and there was Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And slowly I started to see the program, not from the eyes of a cynical adult, but from the eyes of a three-year-old child. It was the moment of my conversion. My son was sitting in my lap with his eyes on the television, completely absorbed in the program. This guy in blue tennis shoes, who I had found irrelevant, knew how to speak to my three-year-old son. By the time my first child was 5 years old, he lost interest in Mr. Rogers. Still, I observed the same attraction to the program in my other two children. By the time my daughter lost interest in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, I had watched this little man from Pittsburgh off and on for 9 years, and I had become a loyal follower. He was born in Latrobe, a small industrial town in western Pennsylvania, which is also the home of Arnold Palmer and Rolling Rock Beer. Mr. Rogers' father was president of the McFeely Brick Company. Remember Mr. McFeely. As a child, Fred was a lonely, sickly boy. He started playing the piano at 5. He was an only child until he turned 11 when his parents adopted a baby girl. His mother doted on Fred, fearing always for his safety. He was not allowed to play outside by himself. When he was 10, she tried to cure him of his hay fever by providing him with an air-conditioned room where he spent an entire summer, day and night. Each winter, he spent 3 months in Florida, which made it difficult for him to maintain childhood friendships back in Pennsylvania. The boy found strength in playing with puppets, playing piano music, and from his relationships with his grandfather. He said, "I remember one day my grandmother and my mother were telling me to get down or not to climb a stone wall. And my grandfather said, 'Let the kid climb the wall. He's got to learn to do things for himself.' I heard that. I will never forget that. What a support he was. He knew there was something more important than scratches and broken bones. I climbed that wall, and then I ran on it. I will never forget that day. After graduation from high school, he enrolled at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida, where he majored in music composition. He planned to be a musician or a minister or both. In 1951, in his senior year of college, he was accepted at the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. Home for Easter vacation, he saw a television for the first time. He said, "I just hated it. I looked at these people on television throwing pies in each other's faces, and I thought, I'm just going to go into television." And everyone was so flabbergasted because literally I was supposed to start in seminary in September. He was hired by NBC in New York City, where he worked as a network floor director on the Kate Smith Hour. He moved back to Pittsburgh, where he took a job with the nation's first community-supported public television station. For the next 10 years, he worked in public television and began his studies at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. His education included training in child psychology at the center founded by Benjamin Spock and Eric Erickson. When Fred Rogers was ordained as a Presbyterian minister in 1963, he was given the charge of ministering to children through television. The program Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood began as a local broadcast on Pittsburgh TV. In 1967, the Sears Roebuck Foundation agreed to fund the program nationally. Fred Rogers' goal was to encourage children to be honest with themselves and with each other, and to grow in conviction that each one of us is a unique and precious part of this world. Eventually, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was broadcast on 290 stations and was watched by more than 8 million people a week. It became the longest-running children's show on public television. For many years, the show's success was a mystery to me. As the nation traveled from Vietnam to Watergate, to the invention of the personal computer, to CNN and MTV, to me, Mr. Rogers seemed out of step with the times. Then I had my children, and I started to understand the attraction. Looking into the TV camera, Fred Rogers pretended that he was talking to just one person. He learned this approach in the early days of television when he worked as a floor manager for the cowboy actor Gabby Hayes. He asked Hayes how he felt about talking to a huge audience of children. Hayes replied that he only spoke to one little buckaroo. This one-on-one philosophy is key to the intimacy that Fred Rogers developed to a high art. He treated each boy and girl to a one-on-one affirmation of their self-worth, telling them that they are each unique and valuable and worthy of recognition. In a busy, noisy, violent culture, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was a slow program. He spoke softly, pausing between words. Like a loving parent, he created an atmosphere of trust in a simple home in a pleasant neighborhood. With the aids of songs and stories, travel and puppets, he captured children's attention and contributed to their courage to grow. He understood a child's natural curiosity. Feeding his goldfish would cause him to think out loud about mouse and how we use our mouse to eat and to whistle and to talk. And this led him to remark about how wonderful it is that we can speak with our mouths. He freely expressed deep feelings. From the anxiety that comes with the first day of school to the death of a pet, the trauma of divorce, and even global conflict, Mr. Rogers explored feelings without embarrassment. He's saying, sometimes you feel like holding your pillow all night long. Sometimes you hug your teddy bear tightly. He's old, but he's still strong. And sometimes you want to snuggle up close with your own mom and dad. At night, you even need the light sometimes. But that's not bad. Please don't think it's funny when you want an extra kiss. There are lots and lots of people who sometimes feel like this. Please don't think it's funny when you want the ones you miss. There are lots and lots of people who sometimes feel like this. Children 2 to 5 watch TV more than 32 hours a week. 32 hours a week. A few years ago, a study was conducted aiming at trying to discover what effect all this television might have on our children. One group of children at Pennsylvania State University Nursery School were shown violent cartoons such as Batman and Superman each day for 4 weeks. Another group were shown Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood each day for 4 weeks. Then the television shows were stopped and the children's behavior was observed for 2 weeks. And the group of children who were shown the violent Batman and Superman cartoons, there was a sharp decline in their patience as well as a decline in acceptance of ordinary rules of the nursery school. On the other hand, the children who saw Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood showed increased persistence in the amount of time they would spend concentrating on projects. They had greater ability to carry out responsibility without adult intervention in tasks like helping with cleanup and greater patience waiting to take their turn or be served at juice time. They showed increased cooperation, increased ability to express feelings, and increased sympathy and help for others. Certain programs remain in my mind as Mr. Rogers' classics. I must have watched that Crayon Factory trip 100 times. I like the trip to the post office and the trip to the dairy. I watched it with each of my 3 children. We all learned how they mix wax to make the crayons and how to squeeze a teat to get milk. I also remember the time in 1987 that he took his program to the Soviet Union, the place our president had described as the evil empire. And I remember the time a few years ago that he had as his guest the cellist Yo-Yo Ma. Ma played music composed by Bach for cello. Now, I don't know how big a role the TV program played in my oldest son's interest in the cello, but I do not underestimate the influence. A few years after watching the show, my son played cello for Yo-Yo Ma at a master class at the Kennedy Center in Washington. And my same son who played the cello is now a music teacher. So nothing we do with a child is ever lost or forgotten. In reading about Mr. Rogers, I was fascinated to discover a little about his private life. He was somewhat eccentric. He awoke each day at 5 a.m. and went swimming in the nude. He weighed in at precisely 143 pounds after the swim. When working on the television program, he would spend several hours writing the script himself. He wrote all his own scripts. Next, he would conduct business at his office at the Family Communications. He did not go out at night. He did not watch television. He was a strict vegetarian, saying, "I don't want to eat anything that has a mother." He did not drink or smoke. He read constantly. He was in bed by 9:30 every night. He never served in the military and was a pacifist. Fred, his wife Joanne, and their two sons spent summers in a small house on Nantucket Island. Believing in recycling, they furnished the house with items they picked up in thrift shops. On Nantucket, Mr. Rogers spent long hours reading and playing the piano and going to the pool to swim naked each day. One of his hobbies was taking pictures. When he was in a picture-taking mood, Fred Rogers kept a miniature automatic Olympus camera in his jacket pocket. He would take it out and take pictures of the people that he met, and about 2 weeks later, send a letter to the person and enclose the pictures that he had taken of them. On the backs of some, he would write a comment like, "I like this one a lot," or, "You look surprised here." The card he sent with the photos was never signed. Instead, he would put a message on a yellow post-it note and affix it to the card so that the recipient could use the card again and send it to someone else. The last Mr. Rogers neighborhood television show was broadcast in August of 2001. Fred Rogers died in February of 2003 at the age of 74. Today, his programs survive on the World Wide Web, and a new program called Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, using characters first created by Fred Rogers, is broadcast regularly. One of his sweaters hangs in the Smithsonian. And on the occasion of his retirement, he said, "I got into television because I hated it. I thought there was some way of using this fabulous instrument to be of nurture to those who would watch and listen." So on Mother's Day, we have mothers and fathers in this congregation who each day think about and care about their children. The ability to say Fred Rogers' trademark message, "I like you just the way you are," is one key to successful parenting. Although, as a parent, I can say it is not always easy to say. The phrase is a direct quote that Fred Rogers took from his grandfather. He said, "I think it was when I was leaving one time to go home after our time together that my grandfather said to me, 'You know, you made this day a really special day just by being yourself. There's only one person in the world like you, and I happen to like you just the way you are.'" So years ago, I looked into the eyes of my baby children, and I saw this awe and this wonder in their faces. I saw openness and freshness. I saw faith and trust. 25 years later, I look into the eyes of my adult children, and as they ignore my advice, I wonder where that baby went. I wonder what happened to these three small children I cared for when we were all so much younger. But then I dig deep into myself and I say to my less than perfect children, "I like you just the way you are." And I say a silent thank you to Fred Rogers. Now, in celebration of our own neighborhood, I invite you to come forward and to take a flower and then return to your seat for the closing words.